We're here on home assignment. We're with Baptist Mission Australia, and we are a part of the team in Malawi, but we work up in Lilongwe and doing theological education, developing pastors, leaders, and evangelists, missionaries for our part of the world in Malawi and in surrounding countries in Africa. But not everybody is up to date with where Malawi is. So surely you'd like to...
Wrong one, you went too fast.
Too fast. There we go. There's Malawi.
Okay. Malawi is in southern Africa. It's quite a small country. It's about half the size of Victoria, and 20% of it is made up of Lake Malawi. As you can see, it's surrounded by Tanzania, as the locals call it, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. We live in Lilongwe, which is the capital and is in the central part of Malawi. One thing that Malawi is known for in the lake is it has the largest selection of fresh tropical fish in the world. So it's a very popular place for snorkeling.
Absolutely. But we don't live on the lake. We live up on the western side of the Rift Valley. If you know your geography, the Rift Valley is probably one of the most significant features in Africa, and it goes right up towards the Arabian Peninsula. And we're on the western side. We're at about 1,000 metres above sea level. So if you want to think about what that means, it's about the height of where Katoomba is. So it's even though we're in the tropics, our climate is modified somewhat. So most of the year, it's pleasant. Most of the year. But it does get hot and sticky at times. But we're based at the Baptist College, Baptist Theological College, which is in the capital in Lilongwe, and we teach our students there. And one of the things that we are called to do is to walk alongside of them, help them in theological education, and talking about some of the difficulties of theological education in Malawi is you have to start to think about some of the difficulties our students go through in trying to be taught. We all think theological education. We were at the graduation only about a month and a half ago, and one of the students, a former student, who's now the president of the BACOMA, which is the Baptist Association, he said, when we started at the college, we thought all we were going to need to do was to learn Bible verses. And now there's nothing wrong with learning Bible verses. That's a very important part. But there is far more if we're going to become pastors and teachers, evangelists and others, than just Bible verses. But for our students, the challenges do not just exist there with getting past what they think theological education will be. There is the sense that in a country like Malawi, we have at least 13 different tribal groups, And that's before you start to dissect and go a little further down into some of the logistics. So 13 different tribal groups, 13 different languages. The British spent some time here. It was a British protectorate in that sense. So English is still a dominant language. So for us to come and teach at the college, it's the lingua franca for them to be taught in English. And that sometimes seems really hard for our students. It sometimes seems really hard to us when they'll be teaching in their own language. But they need to engage with a large body of theological thinking and teaching. And so therefore they need to, the materials that they have are in English. Most of the textbooks in the library are in English. And so therefore they have to learn English. What does that actually mean as teachers? Shirley will talk a little bit more about what she does. But I had this conversation. One of our students lives right up on the Tanzanian border in a village. He's a village pastor. And he's done some basic training, but he's come to college because he knows he needs to learn more. And when he first sat in my class, I could see the face almost drop, because people tell me I still have a Western suburbs type of accent. We lived in Wellington for 20 years, just near Dubbo, and sometimes I might have more of a country sort of drawl that comes out as well. Particularly when I start to preach, I just fall into those old habits a little hard. And we could tell for the first couple of lessons, I don't think he understood just about anything I had to say. Even though we were both trying to talk in English, there's those sorts of difficulties that had to be overcome. But when they start to talk to you, there is this interesting, and the light starts to come on. For lots of our students, English is often their second, third, or fourth language. And it's when you start to have a conversation with our students, it's sometimes there's this almost like when you're on the phone call overseas and there's that time lag that happens. And that's because they're taught English from the national language. When they go to school, they go are taught in the national language, which is Chichewa, which is just one of the tribal languages of the central region. It's the largest group. One of their presidents was Chichewa speaker, and they just said, this is the one we're going to use as the lingua franca. You go to school, you might be taught in your mother tongue, and then you start to have to learn your ABCs, or the equivalent of ABCs, in Chichewa. So it's a new language for many of them. And so therefore, when they come to theological college and they're studying in English, there's this time lag as they convert what Basungu says and puts it into Chichewa, into their native language, and then the reverse process goes on. And you can sometimes see that physical lag. And that's why Shirley's job is such an important one. What do you do, Shirley?
So I teach communication, but I have discovered it's more than just teaching them English and grammar. Because yes, they do learn English at school, but many of them, it's a while since they've been to school, and so they may go back to their villages and they may not have used English. So I have to help them to get back up to not just a conversational level, but a level they can study in English. And that requires learning also how to write and study academically. And so much of what our children learnt when they went through high school, they don't learn like that. A lot of it is learnt by rote. And so getting them to think critically, to study, it takes a bit of them before they can even start to write and study the Bible. So that's what I do.
My speciality is in Old Testament. I teach a number of the Old Testament subjects, which I absolutely love. I love preaching. I love teaching from the Psalms in particular, some of my postgrad work. But we get an opportunity to walk alongside of the students, because having had 25 plus years of experience as a pastor, the college is about training pastors. It's not just about making people smarter in the Bible, if we want to use those sorts of language, the words, but it's about them being able to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And that's what I love, being able to help others to think through and to be equipped to be able to share in their native tongue and in their local context. Baptist Mission Australia has been in Malawi for over 30 years. When I went through theological college, a number of our students went across and was amongst some of those first of the Baptists that went into Malawi. And it's interesting, after 30 years, we are seeing some growth in some of the local communities amongst the Yao people, and I know you're very supportive of the Yaos, and that's fantastic work that is being done and continues to be done. But there is a point where the locals have to take over and have to be able to reach their own people. Part of the problem, even in a country like Malawi, is that the expression is that the Christianity is everywhere. There's probably over 80% of Malawians would claim allegiance to Jesus in one form or another. And so why are we going over there? Well, they talk about it being ankle deep. And what does ankle deep really mean? Even though you see people on a Sunday morning, I would see, as we head off to church or wherever we're heading on a Sunday, you see people dressed up as they do. Ladies often wear colours and all of that sort of stuff, and they go off to church and you see them. But when they go off to church, they may be going off to church, but how far has the Holy Spirit gone into their lives and to change them? In the local villages in particular, they tell me, and you see it, you scratch the surface and you still see traditional African beliefs. In terms of African beliefs, what does that mean? Most of the villages will have their graveyard just on the outside, not like what you or I would experience as a graveyard, but that's where the elders are buried. The elders are often in traditional African beliefs, still exist there in the spirit world. And the spirit world for Africans, and particularly here in Malawi, is real to them. The worst thing about all of that, when modern medicine is expensive and not available for them, the sense is that they, instead of reaching out to be prayed for by their pastors, many will go and seek the local shaman. They'll go and buy a charm to ward away the evil spirits so that they can become better. And even though Christianity is there, there's still a lot of discipleship that still needs to go on. That's why Baptist Mission Australia has asked us to go and to be there for the last few years to teach, because that's going to change when God's people go out and challenge those beliefs and understandings and teach them, so the Holy Spirit can continue the good work that He wants to do in their lives. And that's not just amongst the Yao people, but amongst many of the other tribal groups as well.
So I thought I would also tell you what it is like on a Sunday for us. Because as we said, we are training up men and women to become pastors and leaders in their churches. And as part of that, they invite us to their churches on Sunday. And there's a bit about that where it feels similar, but there's a lot about that which is quite different. And as Gary said, they do like to dress, and they like often to wear something similar, and they also are quite a conservative country. So what does that look like? So I have brought this with me. This is called a chichenji, and women will carry this. Even if they haven't got it on when they get to church, they'll wrap this around. I'm going to show you. It's just a wrap. But basically it comes in from behind and it gets wrapped around like this. And they normally would just tuck it in, but I put straps on mine to keep it together. And it basically gets down to your ankles and it will cover whatever they're wearing. Women should generally would not wear trousers. More young people are in the city, but generally they don't. And then they would still wear this to go over the top. It's also very practical. They use it to carry their babies on their backs. I've seen them put it at church to do the offering on, and so on. So it's a very practical. This one, if you've got good eyesight or up the front, you may actually notice what's written on it. It says Baptist Women of Malawi, and it's in Chichewa and in English. So each year they bring out material with a particular pattern on it. This one also actually has a small piece of purple because that's the colour of the Baptists in Malawi. So this one is quite special as well. So the ladies will do that. What else does church look like? Well, it's long. You can expect it to be 2 to 3 hours. And they've usually had Sunday school, all age Sunday school before that. You arrive and the building will often won't have windows, which is good in the heat, that lets things through. The ceiling may not be lined. If you're fortunate, you will have something to sit on in the way of plastic chairs, but often it's just mats on the floor. The floor may be earth floor, and that as well. So, yeah, so be prepared to be uncomfortable. And the very first church service I went to, I had just arrived the day before. I'd had 50 hours of travelling, and then we had a two-hour trip to the church, and a vehicle that broke down several times. And then we're always considered special guests, and so we get to sit up the front. And I'm not an up-front person, and I like to sit down the back where no one can see me, and I feel very uncomfortable, and I can't move and fidget, and I'm getting, the seats are hard, and so on, and everything is in Te Tewa. And so I've got to listen. I only know a small, as they say, pangono, a very small amount of Te Tewa. When Gary preaches, they will translate, so that makes the service longer. I can read now out of the Te Tewa Bible, but I can't always understand it. So you're always doing all this. What is going on? What is going on in this service? And you're getting very tired. They also love to sing and to dance. And that's what the next video is going to be. And they have every group will get up. So it will be the women. It will be the children. There may be some family groups. The men will get up and they will do a song and a dance. So I thought that you might like to see one. And the beanies are not because it's cold. Apparently they just like them. So there you go. Very energetic. So when we saw that song this morning, I just wanted to get up and at it because everything is very energetic. So it's quite tiring, and especially, and it just, yeah, won't. Right, your turn.
I think the word you were trying to say was sensory overload.
That's the one.
African churches, you're definitely a part of it. And part of what we do and have to do is to identify with their culture and understand their culture so that we can help them to not only identify with the gospel, but to help them, we identify with the culture. As a pastor, the only time I get dressed like that in that photo is obviously when I'm doing either a wedding or a funeral back here in Australia. But in many of the traditional churches, and we have many traditional churches, that's the way you're expected. Even what we find even more interesting is that I should have had a photo for you, but many of the pastors wear dog collars. Many of them came from a Presbyterian background, and so that's what people saw church as, and therefore that's what they had to identify with. Interesting enough, as an Australian pastor, they often wear this purple colour, so I always think they're little bishops and and all of that running around the place. So things are quite different to us, but we need to understand and identify to their culture and what they're trying to say to their people, and that's their culture. So, as Shirley said, church life is quite different in different contexts, in different places. But I love telling this story because our students are making a difference. The picture on your right... It's inverted, is it?
It's on their left.
On their left, or whichever one it is. The
lower one.
The lower one, let's say that. Everyone will now know what we say. About 3 months ago, we were invited to one of our former students. He'd been the pastor at this particular church, which was around about 10 kilometres outside of Lilongwe. The church is located in a village context. He's about in between the building. There is stuck in the middle of two maize fields. And it was an interesting trip because in the middle of the, by the end of the rainy season, which this was what it was, it's saturated. We could tell it was so. We're in a four-wheel drive and the pastor tells us to come forward. As soon as we got off the harder road, bang, we got stuck. But never fear, if you're in Malawi, there's always about 20 Malawians that will come and give you a push as long as you have enough kwacha, enough money to hand over. That was the pastor's problem, not mine. That was a good start to our visit into this church. We parked the car in a safe place and went in. The pastor apologised as we were coming in, and he said, "I'm sorry, but we had these beautiful steel poles to support our roof. Now they're in the middle of this growing church, and there's some brickwork that they've formed for their first walls that will be erected one day. The canopy is a thatched roof." And it was originally supported by some nice steel poles. The problem with the steel poles was some of the locals needed them more than they did. So we were only a week or two after the poles had been taken, and they had to put in some temporary timber struts. Of course, the roof had been weakened. When we came in, it wasn't raining. But we sat there. We had some special chairs because we were guests, of course, up the front, so that was nice. But just about as I was going to get up to preach, in the rainy season, it comes in thick and it comes in hard. One of the words of Chichewa that I can teach you when rain comes in, and it's not the hardest word, but it's certainly one of the words of intense rain, is Mavula. Mavula. And that's exactly what it sounded like as the rain started to come down. It was okay at the start. Quickly, someone came up and got me an umbrella. So I had an umbrella in that hand. I had my tablet that I was preaching off in this hand. And we were able to continue. But as the rain continued, the little gaps in the roof that had been weakened started to come through. So if you have a good look at that photo, the ground is saturated. The water was running through. And they were all sitting on these mats, and they started to lift up the mats. Some of the mats went over their head to try to keep them dry. And there was this gradual procession from a nice organised congregation like this, where they started to gravitate to the back, which was basically the only dry ground that was left underneath this roof that was falling apart. Elders started to go and get more tarps to try and patch up the roof so that the service could continue. And while all of this is going on, of course, God's there. But what amazed me was, if that was, I won't say Morisset Baptist, but if that was happening here in Australia, I was just thinking most of the congregation I'm a part of, they would be heading for the exit. They'd be heading for their cars to go home somewhere where it's nice and dry. All of them stayed to the end. That was their church. That was their congregation. That was their time that they set to be with God. And that was the dedication, their love for God. They gathered in their poverty, and they were able to see it through. Now, why do we go to places like that? We're teaching students that will work in that sort of context. Some of those churches, they'll struggle for years to have a concrete floor. Very few of those village churches will ever have nice pews that are padded like this one. But it's their church. It's their encounter with God. And they need pastors to help them take that journey through life as they grow in their faith to understand Jesus Christ as Lord and Saviour. Not all the churches are like that. The other church is, although it's got a basic church, but it's still, many of them will have steel roofs. And that's always interesting in the rainy season. trying to preach under an iron roof with no insulation, when it comes down, it can get quite noisy. And but that's their church, and that's the life in an African church, and that's why we teach our students. But we come alongside of our students in their need. I was having a conversation with one of your people here this morning, and many of you know about 3-4 months ago, Cyclone Freddy left the shores of Australia. It went to Mozambique, then it actually did a bit of a loop, and it finally went back into to Mozambique and crossed into Malawi, and it devastated the country. In the south of the country, they estimate, and it was only an estimate, about 500,000 people were dislocated from their villages, from their homes. Many of them lost their crop, which is their food, and it was very, very difficult for them. About 2 weeks after the cyclone had hit, the Baptist Association, along with many others, there responded. And we went to one of the more moving services we'd ever been to in Malawi, because there's their gathering. And I suppose from our perspective, the social media is not as common in Malawi, but we had people putting in front of us on their phones little videos that have been shot of people covering under their houses for protection and seeing them swept away, people losing their lives. And there was a great movement across the country about how can we deal with this. And on very short notice, in the chapel, many Baptists from across the long way gathered to pray. There was many responses, and of course it is it's been most helpful that Australian Baptists and many others have donated to help the needs. I know currently our team with Tim and Mel Downs and others down in the south of Malawi are still working to try to build some of those village huts and housing and other infrastructure so people can get back to some sort of level of normality. But together with God's people, and many people gave out of their own difficult circumstances to help their fellow Malawians to be able to reform and restructure. The picture there, which is on a bit of a ramp, you may or may not be able to pick it, but they are cobs of maize. Maize is the staple diet. The Baptist Association has its own farm, and they were harvesting it, and that's volunteers and others have gathered there to get the corn off the corn cobs off the cob, and that's physically, they do it by hand. Sometimes you'll get a knife and that might help the process in somewhat. They then have to put it out onto the tarps and dry it, and then in one form or another it'll be pounded, and it'll eventually become the staple, which they have as maize flour, which they then cook into in Malawi they call it nsima, and it's a maize porridge, which is you haven't had a meal in Malawi unless you've had maize porridge. And I can see some people squinting there. That's pretty much the first experience most people have, and that's about what they think of maize porridge. But it's their staple, and that's what they live on. And the Bakoma, the association, they distribute that maize flour to many of the churches around to help them, to help those people that are the most affected by the Cyclone Freddy. And that's one way that the association helps. We also come alongside of our students and to help them in their need, because many of the students give up either working on the family farm to come to college. Many of them give up good jobs because they're hoping they believe God is calling them into some sort of ministry, and it's hard for them. And some of our students are beneficiaries of the same maize crop that is that was harvested there for those in need. When they come to campus, they also have to cook their own food as well. So that's it's another chore amongst their studying. But we try to get alongside of our students, and that's our dog. One of the things we inherited when we went to Lilongwe, some Baptist missionaries from the States left behind some things, and we got two dogs. We like our dogs, they're good for security. The problem with for most Malawians is they are afraid of dogs. We put up a fence around our compound for safety, our house, and we used to have people come quite regularly to the front door and visit us. Once we put the fence up, once we put dogs there, they will stop coming. So every day I go out walking. Every day I have dog biscuits in that pocket that I've got my other hand in there, and that's why the dog is looking for the dog biscuit. If you can look at that photo carefully. What I have to do is to help the students to understand our dogs. Yes, they are guard dogs, but they're not vicious in that sense. So often I'm about to give my student, that's Wellington, a dog biscuit so he can feed the dog, so they can start to feel they can still come and see us, to chat. As a pastor, some of the best moments in our teaching at the college are not the formal moments when I might talk to them about what a psalm of lament looks like, but what does it mean to cry to God in that context? How is that part of your life and your life experience, and what is God teaching you through that? And we can only do that by building relationships. And we want our students to feel that they are able to be very much a part that we are open to pastorally care and help them in many practical things. Shirley, you've been doing some very practical things to help our students.
We are always amazed how God provides before we see the need. And one of them was, as Gary said, when they come to the college, they used to have fully catered, but that got too expensive. So the students are expected to provide their own food and to cook it each day. And you saw them trying to do that maize. Cooking a meal in Malawi is from scratch can take a long time. And there's only a basic facilities in the kitchen. What we didn't also tell you is that power is very unreliable, so most of it is cooked on a fire outside. So one of the things, I was talking to one of the other lecturers who's also the Dean of Students, and we came up with a suggestion to pay for a lady to come and actually do the cooking for them. And she comes and she prepares, cooks lunch for them and prepares dinner that they can come and have. And that's saving them a lot of time, like an hour and a half at least each day, and they can keep that for their studies. But as we were thinking about this and what it would cost, I had a lady in Australia approach me and said, I'd like to send you this amount of money each month. And it was just the amount of money we needed to pay this lady. And so I just am always stunned about God knew beforehand, and we're just seeing that we can help them in not just with their studies.
Now, we always love coming and telling stories, and after church and when we have lunch together, we'd love to share some more with you one-on-one. But while we're gathered together, there are some really helpful things that you can help us with. One of the things I always say to people, we all know about the power of prayer. One thing I tell people is my first job after university, was as a mining engineer. And engineers have a brain that's wired in a certain way. And we think of contingencies. We always have plan A, B, and C. In Malawi, we need D, E, and F, and that's probably just before lunchtime. We really value the power of prayer. If the Lord puts us on your heart, please pray for us, because we feel out of our depth so often. We feel stretched, but we know God goes before us, and God puts people just like you in places and at times of prayer. So we appreciate that. So today we want to say thank you. We really do want to thank you, because we know Morissette people have been praying for us for a long time. So thank you so much. How do you get to understand a bit more of our dilemma? If you're not receiving our newsletter, we'd happy to come and put you on that. And I know many of our churches distribute it for us, and we say thank you for that. That just helps you understand where we're at. We obviously have talked about the financial needs. We're finished our first couple of years of ministry. Some of that was done remotely during those COVID years, or I'm not supposed to talk about that that word. But we also were in Malawi for over 18 months, but we're back now on our home assignment, and we've got to head out again, hopefully after the end of September. We can say after the end of September, because we've got to stay here. Our daughter, went on coming back, she got engaged in January. She said, by the way, we're going to have a wedding on the 23rd of September, so we can't go before the 23rd of September, but we'll be heading back in the second half of this year. But we need that support for another 2 years, to not just for us in that sense, but to help the students who make the difference. They know the language, they know the culture, they just need the education that they to engage with, and they need the resources. The college is in a phase of transition. They're looking at accreditation with the Higher Education Board, so that their students can then do higher degrees going onwards. But they're also, in this sense, they're in between worlds. The solar project that we advertised through Baptist Mission Australia was to change and transform them. We had, as I said, we had graduation about 6 weeks ago, and I was having this chat with one of our students that was there that very first year that were there in 2016, and we were lamenting and talking about what it was like to study by candlelight. At that stage, about every couple of nights, they would be without light. They still had to put their assignments in. They couldn't afford batteries. Many of them had to resort to candlelights. Now, I don't know about you, but I struggle reading by candlelight. I can do it by torchlight, but not candlelight. It's difficult, and to do hours and hours of work. The college is now trying to become more advanced in its studies, and that means that there are indeed difficulties in terms of presenting essays and other assignment work electronically if you don't have power. And so the solar project was key for us. I'm here today to say thank you. That I had an email this week from our mission office in Melbourne. That project has been oversubscribed, and we can say thank you for that. And we are here to say thank you. If you've contributed, if you've prayed for it, thank you. And we're looking forward to going back to make a big difference in the lives of the students and the faculty, that will be able to have reliable 24-hour power going forward. And that's because of Australian Baptists. So thank you. But there is a constant need in our college. Many of the students come and take a step of faith. Isn't that what our journey with Jesus is? It's a step of faith. They come and they have their little, and then by a month or 2 months or 6 months, or circumstances changes, sponsors stop sponsoring them, and they get caught. We have had great need in the years that we've been in Malawi to indeed go and to offer scholarships for our students, and many Baptists have done that in big and small ways. And it's just like Shirley was saying, We are constantly made. Students come and we say, we can't do anything, but God can do great things. And it's amazing how often somebody sends, can I send you a little bit of money? And through the scholarship fund, we're able to help our students to pay their fees so that they can complete their studies. If you want any more details from us or about us, Shirley's got some of our cards at the back, and it explains all of those things. And you can give to her your email address or anything like that if you want to get the newsletter. But today is most of all about thanking you for praying for us, our students, because as you do that, those people that are going out into those villages, into those churches, will make a difference through the work of the Holy Spirit. So thank you.